Good morning, Council.
If we could all grab a seat. Thank you. It is 9:06 a.m. on Wednesday, September 5th, 2018. I will call the City Council briefing meeting to order for today. We will begin with an invocation, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. Our invocator this morning is the Very Reverend Canon Charles Camlin. He's a native of Georgetown, South Carolina, and serves as Assistant Rector of the Church of the Holy Communion. He is also Assistant Academic Dean in the Dallas campus of Kramer Theological House. While in Virginia, he ministered at the Rector of Holy Trinity, as the Rector of the Holy Trinity Church and teacher of the church history in the Trinity Christian School in Fairfax. He served as assistant professor at the Reformed Episcopal Seminary in Bluebell, Pennsylvania, and while in the Diocese of the Central States of the Reformed Episcopal Church, he functioned as chairman of the Standing Committee and canon missioner and dean of the Convocation of Virginia. He holds a Bachelor of Arts from Southeastern College at Wake Forest, Master's of Theology from Dallas Theological Seminary, and Master of Theology from the Cranmer Theological House in Houston. Thank you so much for coming. He is the church is in District 12, and I appreciate you leading that congregation. All rise.
Let us pray. O Lord God Almighty, guide, we pray thee, all those to whom thou hast committed the government of this city, especially our mayor and city council. Grant to them at this time special gifts of wisdom and understanding, of counsel and strength, that upholding what is right and following what is true, they may obey thy holy will and fulfill thy divine purpose. Amen.
Amen.
We got it up there. We got a Texas flag up there. Mr. Callahan, I think you have a resolution.
Yes, I do, Mayor, and thank you all, and good morning, everyone, in the audience and out watching on television. I'm very honored as the new veterans liaison to come today and honor the city of Dallas, but more importantly, honor Purple Heart veterans. So we're going to make the city of Dallas a Purple Heart city today. And I would like to ask, if you don't mind, Mr. John Lundquist, he's the state commander of the Purple Heart, Texas Purple Heart group. And then there's Gus Bitschok, state junior vice chairman, or vice commander rather, and then Lazaro Airborne Camarillo, visiting from Corpus Christi. So, gentlemen, please come up here and welcome, and I'll read this to you all. It goes like this. Whereas the people of the city of Dallas, Texas, have great admiration and the utmost gratitude for all the men and women who have selflessly served their country and this community in the armed forces. And whereas the Purple Heart is the oldest military decoration in present use and was initially created as the badge of military merit by George Washington in 1782. And whereas the Purple Heart was the first American service award or decoration made available to the common soldier and is specifically awarded to members of the United States Armed Forces who have been wounded or paid the ultimate sacrifice in combat with a declared enemy of the United States of America. And whereas the contributions and sacrifices of the men and women from the city of Dallas, Texas, who served in the armed forces have been vital in maintaining the freedoms and the way of life enjoyed by our citizens. And whereas many men and women in uniform have given their lives while serving in the armed forces. And whereas many citizens of our community have earned the Purple Heart Medal as a result of being wounded while engaged in combat with the enemy force construed as a singularly meritorious act of essential service. And whereas September the 5th, 2018 has officially been designated as the day in Dallas, Texas to remember and recognize veterans who are recipients of the Purple Heart Medal. Now for Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City of Dallas hereby claims Dallas, Texas, as a Purple Heart City for honoring the service and sacrifice of our nation's men and women in uniform, wounded or killed by the enemy, while serving to protect the freedoms enjoyed by all Americans. And I have this proclamation signed by the Mayor of Dallas, Michael S. Rollins, on this day, September the 5th. Commander, I just want to say thank you for your efforts and your congratulations to you and your other gentlemen. Thank you all very much. Sir, thank you very much. And just as a personal aside, my uncle was a Purple Heart in World War II, received two Purple Hearts, a Bronze Star, and I think a Merit of Honor, and he was highly decorated as a soldier there as they fought from Belgium over into Germany, and so I always had a lot of respect for that uncle. I had many uncles that fought in World War II, and really every war that this country has ever fought, even the Revolutionary War, I've got kin folks. So thank you all very much, and the honor of sacrifice. Would you like to say a word? And I think you have a presentation.
Okay. I can see. Okay. Good morning. My name is John Lundquist, and I'm the Department of Texas State Commander for the Purple Heart. I was a U.S. Army infantryman who served in Vietnam and was wounded in combat. I would like to thank Mayor Rawlings, City Council members, citizens of Dallas, Texas, and also all veterans who have served our country. What does it mean when a city is recognized as a Purple Heart City? When the City of Dallas is recognized, we are remembering and honoring all Purple Heart recipients, living or dead. We are honoring all veterans living in the City of Dallas that have served in the military. We're taking a moment to honor George Washington, his contribution to our country. We're also using this moment to educate all city citizens of the sacrifice of your veterans and remind you to thank them for their service. The last thing I'll leave you with, a chapter here in Dallas, we call it Dallas-Fort Worth Mid-Cities, chapter 15:13. Our local chapter was named for the Bible verse, John 15:13. I feel it's very fitting that all those who have been in combat and return, the verse states, a greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Again, thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
I think they want to get a photo here.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Can I just grab up? Thank you. Ms. Callahan, we can't honor these men enough. Please, we'll take our open microphone speakers. Ms. Johnson.
Thank you. Good morning. Your first five registered speakers will be as follows. Helen Shykoff, Charlie Montez, Cynthia Austin, Carol Bell Walton, and Freddie Delgado. I recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Rollins only. Also, if you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, Helen Shykoff. Helen Shykoff, not present. Charlie Montez. Helen Shykoff.
Yes, that is me.
Okay. Hi. Good morning, everybody. My name is Helene Shykoff, 318 North Edgefield Avenue, 75208. I'm in District 1. What I'd like to speak about this morning on the agenda, it says animal cruelty and homelessness. Since I have 3 minutes, I am going to address animal cruelty and come back another time for homelessness, since that's an issue I'm familiar with. My main talking point will be basically in relationship to dog bites, and I'd like to bring that up in relationship to animal cruelty because dog bites have been on the rise. And there's been an outcry in the city in the last few years about dog bites. And we remember when it happened because there were two fatalities in the city, which is a rare thing. But we do have dog bites on the rise in various neighborhoods. And so I'd like to address that and tie it in with animal cruelty. Animal cruelty that disturbs me the most are breeding, hoarding, and dog fighting are the main ones. So breeding, hoarding, and dog fighting, but we also have all forms of cruelty, which includes neglect, failure to shelter and house and feed, are part of the animal cruelty issues that we face in the city. I'm just going to jump to the point before I hit dog bites, is that one of the things that are happening in the city that in previous council meetings, I'm talking about a couple of years ago, that every member of the council at that time, including the mayor, were very interested in the development of the city. So we have Trinity Park Grove, we have Trinity Groves, we have Riverfront, the Riverfront Project, we have the Cedars, we've had these developmental areas. We also have areas that I looked up that are on the list of newly developing areas. And those areas are Keastwood, Keast Cliff, Bonnyview, Redbird, and Arcadia Park. So we're talking about moving south in Dallas. We're talking about moving southwest and southeast. In order to develop, and of course development is important, we want companies to come into the city of Dallas. We don't want them outside of Dallas. We want taxpayers in the city. We don't want people driving 30 minutes to work in traffic. We want them to live in the city of Dallas. In order to live in neighborhoods that are being developed and affordable, like my neighborhood, Winnetka Heights, when I moved in, the crime rate was up. We hired off-duty police officers because very few police officers responded to calls in a timely fashion. So we're talking about developing in areas where we need to reduce crime. So I know I came here initially because Just Save the Dog comes, and I just came to observe what Just Save the Dogs has to say. And I know they tie it into domestic violence. But I'm telling you that the FBI has set up in 2014 a database that reaches across the nation, that every single city and county and state could access on animal cruelty. And I think everybody knows that. Is my time up?
Thank you.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay.
Come on back.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you.
Charlie Montez.
Hello, how y'all doing this morning? I'd like to take the time to thank this council for allowing me to speak on this important matter. My name is Charlie Montes, and I live in West Dallas, District 6. My neighborhood is called Ledbetter Eagle Ford. I have my own independent dog rescue and I have been rescuing dogs for a few years now. I rescued over 25 dogs and have found happy, loving homes for all of them. But with that being said, I've also witnessed unspeakable abuse and cruelty to these poor animals. Today we are campaigning against animal cruelty. But who gets to determine between animal cruelty or just a violation of simple city ordinance? I've reported dogs that are tied up and don't have no food or water in extremely cold and hot weather. But the only thing that the people get is a citation for tethering when it's clearly cruelty. A few days ago, a dog was reported for flea infested, people being gone for the whole weekend. You called 911 because that's what we're told to call. And 911 directs you to the DOS, and then DOS refers you back to 311. So basically, nobody takes charge of what's going on with these poor animals. A couple of weeks ago, the City of Dallas City Hall put out a memo assigning two Dallas DPD officers to work with DOS, SPCA, city marshals, and other agencies in charge with animal cruelty. But will the DPD officers be in charge to oversee service, direct, and manage call all other entities? DPD has to be accountable for all their performances. Statistics show that people who abuse dogs or are visually cruel are more likely to commit child abuse and spouse abuse. Police are always asking the community to assist them in reporting crimes and drug activity and things of that nature. Well, now it's time for the community to ask the police's assistance. So, thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
Thank you.
Cynthia Austin. Not present.
No, she's here.
Cynthia Austin.
Good morning. My name is Cindy Austin, and I'm a resident in District 13, and I own property in District 11. The city manager approached the city budget by stating, "What kind of city do we want to be?" I believe that's something we should be reflecting on. Gandhi also once said that the greatness of our nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way its animals are treated. I couldn't agree more, and this also applies to the city of Dallas. Over 350 dead animals have been dumped in the southern part of Dallas over 3 years. 14% to 17% of those bear signs of abuse. Animal crimes are crimes that occur concurrently with other violent crimes like domestic abuse, child abuse, murder, aggravated assault, theft and drugs. It's even been linked to sexual abuse and terrorism. What astounds me is that the city of Dallas is the only top 10 city that does not have an animal cruelty unit, and we do not have your support. However, in the budget, we do know that there's $2.3 million that have been earmarked for library books, for censors on library books. So despite 3 years of research and advocacy, staff failed to propose a budget for an animal cruelty unit. We have funders willing to support a DPD animal cruelty unit, but that's only if the city can show commitment. We are asking for $500,000 of a $2 million budget for runaway library books to be dedicated to an animal cruelty unit within the Dallas Police Department. Most of you live in the most affluent districts in Dallas, and while you don't see the animal abuse, neglect, dumped and dead animals, that does not allow you to ignore the issue. That behavior is exactly why our city has an animal abuse problem. Our community understands that our officers are understaffed and underpaid, but that's a whole issue of its own, and it does not excuse our responsibility. I implore you to revisit the budget. I'm certain that the community is not demanding sensors to be put on books, but what we are begging for is our city to step up and commit to an animal cruelty unit that is led by the Dallas Police Department. I stand before you as a person who has experience working with the shelters and rescues in our community. I have seen it all, and we do have a problem in Dallas, but what we don't have is an appropriate response for handling it. No specific agency is in charge of managing cruelty investigations, following through with prosecution. The problem in Dallas is that five agencies investigate cruelty to animals, and not one is accountable. All five agencies have separate databases that do not communicate with each other. None of these organizations meet or have designated areas of authority. In addition to Dallas being the only top 10 city in the United States without a dedicated animal cruelty unit, the fact that Dallas Animal Services receives roughly 4,000 reports of animal cruelty annually, and out of those, DPD conducts about 50 investigations and averaged only 7 arrests. Do the math. That percentage is unacceptable and embarrassing for a great city like Dallas. Our community wants and deserves more. We must have an animal cruelty unit led by the Dallas Police Department. They alone are the only agency that can arrest and prosecute. I've been told that our ask is too late to consider. And I'll ask you again, why is this not a priority in our city? Thank you.
Carol Bell Walton.
Good morning. Carol Bell Walton, District 9. I realize that we're between city auditors, but
yeah, if you can, thank you.
I realize that we're between head city auditors, but if you have an acting auditor, I do have some questions. I've been reviewing 990 forms for nonprofits, and I think program service revenue is a gross number. So I called a couple of CPAs, and they verified that program service revenue on a 990 is a gross number. But that's the question we need to ask the city auditor. And what got me looking at this was the State Fair of Texas. State Fair of Texas said they had 2.4 million visitors, and the income they reported was $56,386,155. Well, you can also see, if you look at the next page of the handout I gave you, that the State Fair of Texas announced that they sold $56 million worth of coupons. That leaves $386,000 for parking and gate, or 16 cents a person. That didn't seem reasonable to me, so I dug deeper into the 990, and it turns out that the State Fair of Texas actually reports $21 million worth of parking and gate every year. So that's in there. There's a picture of that in your handout. But I'm kind of wondering, if there's $56 million in coupons and there's $21 million in parking, wouldn't the gross be $77 million? And then we go to vendor space revenue. As we go to vendor space revenue, I had to dig deep for vendor space revenue. It's actually in their annual report. There's a picture of it in your handout. They reported $5 million in vendor space revenue rental. They have tons of vendor space, 16 major car dealers, so $5 million. So my question for the new city auditor is, if you take the $56 million in coupons and you add the $21 million in parking and you add the $5 million in exhibit space and other income, do you really get a gross of $82 million? I think you do. So what keyed me to this was I started looking at the 990s, and every year the program service revenue virtually matches the coupon sales. In 2015, the State Fair of Texas reported $12,000 more than coupon sales. Ooh, I can hear a pin drop. Okay, I think that... I want to know if on audits, does the city go back to press releases? Because I think this is key. Wouldn't this have a direct bearing on excess revenue? Mr. Winters, I provided one of these for you. I started looking at this because we have some wonderful park board reps. We have Mark Clayton, Philip Kingston, Scott Griggs, and Adam Medrano and Marlon Rollins have done a great job.
Thank you, Ms. Bell Walton.
So, $26 million underreported.
Thank you.
Freddie Delgado. not present. We will now move to our registered speaker present. That is an elected official, John Wiley Price.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, let me begin by throwing this Hail Mary. Maybe it's in the DNA. But my Nike stock is going to be all right because I've never seen a Klansman in Nikes. There's no rhyme, no reason. Fortunately for me and the balance of you, I've had the chance to flesh my feelings here today on Labor Day. It gave me a chance to look into the eyes of quite a few of the council members. I was able to express in private what my mother would never permit me to say in public. So, Mayor, you've been kind enough to give me this privilege, so I'm going to follow the wisdom of the hip-hop generation. Rather than freestyling or going off the dome, I wrote down three quotes that adequately convey the disappointment I have found in certain council members and a few others on this council. I brought with me today the voices of Dr. Martin Luther King, El Hajj Malik El Shabab, also known as Malcolm X, and Mark Twain. I believe in diversity. So I picked a reasoning reverend, a radical revolutionary, and a good white brother. In the American struggle for justice and liberation, there's always a good white brother and even sister. Dr. King's letter from the Birmingham jail said, "First, I must confess that over the past few years, I have been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I've almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in his stride toward freedom is not the White Citizens Council or the Ku Klux Klan, but the white moderate, who is more devoted to order than justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice. And Malcolm X on The Progress or Like the Hells of says, you don't stick a knife in a man's back 9 inches, then pull it out 6 inches and say you're making progress. No matter how much respect, no matter how much recognition whites show toward me, as far as I am concerned, as long as it's not shown to every one of our people in this country, it doesn't exist. And finally, my good white brother, Samuel Langhorne Clement, also known as Mark Twain."
I'll give you another minute, Mr.
Thank you. Mark Twain says, "History never repeats itself, but it rhymes." In those 7 concise but concentric words, Twain describes Dallas by history and practice. The names get changed and the circumstances get tweaked, but we continue to make the same melodious mistakes. Unfortunately, we're here today because some on this city have the power but use it to the disadvantage of the powerless. Apparently, African-American rhymes with lack of integrity. Apparently, problem with one black man rhymes with the issue of all black people. Apparently, getting someone we all respect rhymes with replacing black leadership with white leadership. Let me sum it up. I have become afraid of white liberals who carry knives and aren't creative enough to bust a rhyme. We can do better than this, Dallas. Dallas deserves better. There is no rhyme nor reason for this."
Thank you. Thank you.
This,
thank you.
This concludes your first five registered speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins, do you have a question? We're not going to get in discussion, but...
Well, the question is very simple, Marilyn. I want to say, number one, Helen Giddens was going to be here this morning to speak, but she had to be an awesome appropriation meeting. But I also want to thank Commissioner Price for coming down here. And I also want to thank the community and the black leadership for coming down here. And I would let all the black leadership who came down, will you please stand? If you're a black leader who came down today, please stand. Number two.
Mr. Atkins,
I know you're all great leaders in this community.
Mr. Atkins,
and there are also other not, black leadership in on this horseshoe, around the horseshoe.
We promised each other we would
black
not
leadership.
Do this.
I just want to make sure I'm on the record of saying that. Thank you.
Do you have a question, Mr. Felder? Mr. Atkins didn't ask one.
No, I don't have a question, Mayor, but I would like to make a statement.
We're not going to use this time to get an argument.
It won't be an argument. It's a statement.
Quickly.
It won't be quick, but
okay.
I need to say something, Mayor.
I know, but I can't.
I
let
need
you.
To say something.
It's not the will of the council, Mr. Felder.
Is it not the will of you? Because I hadn't heard the council say anything.
Mr. Felder,
I need to say something,
this.
Mayor. This is very important.
You can say it later, okay?
No, wait a minute. The community is here.
You could have already. Said
No. You're debating with me. I said I need to make a statement.
And I said make it brief, and you said no.
I didn't say no. I said it might not be brief. That's not no. Let me make my statement, please.
No. Let's go. All right. Thanks, guys.
We'll now move to your voting agenda. Item 1, approval of minutes of the August 14, 2018 City Council budget briefing and August 15, 2018 City Council.
Hey, before we go there, I'm sorry. There are a bunch of people here signed up to speak on budget items, okay? And I see you here, and usually we're going to take you at the end. But we have an item. Item 8 is a public hearing. So if you just wait a few minutes and you were here to talk about the budget at the end, you can talk about the budget in just a few minutes. So just to manage your expectations if you're here. Okay. Thank you.
Item 1, approval of minutes of the August 14, 2018 City Council budget briefing and August 15, 2018 City Council meeting.
We have a motion to approve. We have a motion to second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 2 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning you only have individual appointments. Nominees for individual appointments. To the Automated Red Light Enforcement Commission, Samuel G. Turnabin is being nominated by Councilmember Kingston. To the Community Development Commission, Joseph Ramirez is being nominated by Councilmember Griggs. To the Citizen Homelessness Commission, Alan L. Tallis is being nominated by Councilmember Kleiman. Mr. Tallis meets the general public special qualification. To the Civil Service Board adjunct members, Matthew Haney is being nominated by Councilmember Callahan. To the Judicial Nominating Commission, Andrew Melsheimer is being nominated by Councilmember Clayton. To the Youth Commission, Judith Gonzalez is being nominated by Councilmember Griggs. And Elijah Ryan Mitchell Burrell is being nominated by Councilmember Atkins.
Thank you. Do I have a motion? We got a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 3, a resolution authorizing an increase to the interlocal agreement with Dallas County, Texas County, on behalf of the Dallas County Elections Department for assistance and services related to verifying a city petition, not to exceed $13,111.68.
Have a motion. Motion is second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 4 is a resolution authorizing 1, a joint election agreement and election services contract between the City of Dallas, Dallas County, and various other jurisdictions within Dallas County for the conduct of a joint election to be held on Tuesday, November 6, 2018, in an amount not to exceed $52,000. 2, legal advertising in connection with the Tuesday, November 6, 2018 city special election in an amount not to exceed $8,000. And 3, $300 for translation services for publication and posting notices related to the election.
We got a motion and a second. Discussion, Mr. Callahan.
No, sir. I'll item 2.
Thank you. Thank you. Motion's carried.
Agenda item 5. The resolution authorizing the mayor to appoint an ad hoc city council canvassing committee to review the returns of the November 6, 2018 special election and submit a canvass report to the full city council on Tuesday, November 20, 2018. The members that have been appointed by the mayor to the ad hoc canvassing committee are as follows. Councilmember Sandy Grayson, Chair, Mayor Pro Tem Casey Thomas, Councilmember Jennifer S. Gates, Councilmember B. Adam McGew, and Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Adam Medrano as alternate.
Thank you. We have a motion to approve. And a motion is second. Any discussion? Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a question for Mr. Medrano. Do you think you might be available that day? You're the alternate, and I have a possibility that I might. I found out today, first day of preschool, that it's Grandparents' Day at my grandchild's school. So, okay, it's the Tuesday before Thanksgiving.
So let's just make. Do you want to just move you as an alternate and him?
That'd be great. Could we switch that?
Decision,
do you mind doing that?
So,
okay,
so
thanks.
I'll make that.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't know that until this morning.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, now with Ms. Medrano as the member and Ms. Gates as the alternate. And do we have a motion to approve? You accepted that? Okay. All right. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. We'll take up item 6 following our executive session.
Correct. Item 6 will be placed on hold. We'll now move to agenda item 8.
Okay. And, let's just go ahead. This is where we can hear folks talk.
Okay. Item 8 is a public hearing to receive comments on a 77.79 cents per $100 property tax rate for the 2018-19 fiscal year, as discussed on August 22, 2018. City Council will vote to adopt a tax rate on Tuesday, September 18, 2018, at Dallas City Hall, 60 South, at 9 a.m. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak on this item? You may come forward. You'll be given. Please state your name.
Should Ms. Clapp and anybody that wants to speak, should we just mark you off as this is your speech and you don't need to make it later? Thanks.
Yeah. Okay.
Good morning, Mayor Rollins and members of the City Council. I'm Patty Clapp. I live at 9418 Trail Hill in District 10. I'm here representing the Friends of the Dallas Public Library. The last time I spoke to you, I came in costume. I was Thing One, and I came to ask you to restore the funding to the libraries so that our branches and Central Library could increase the number of hours and days that they were open. I want to thank you for that funding. The increased hours and days have allowed more members of our communities to take advantage of the programs and opportunities offered at our libraries, from ESL to GSD to children's story hours, computer access, our libraries serve our communities and our residents. I recently had the opportunity to view my branch library from a slightly different perspective. I check out a lot of e-books. I go to my library and I check out a book and I leave the library. Well, a couple of weeks ago, four of my grandchildren, ages 3, 4, 8, and 12, were in town, and we were looking for something to do that afternoon, so we went to the Idalia Road Library. What was going to be an hour adventure in the library turned into a two-hour adventure. My grandchildren found books curled up in corners, were sitting on the furniture that's provided in that children's section. They played the educational games that were there, and they didn't want to leave. I looked at mothers with children checking out bags of books. I looked at other preschoolers sitting there and playing and reading books. And while my grandchildren were entertained, I took the opportunity to walk around the library, which I really don't do when I just run in and check out a book and leave. All the computers were filled. There were people sitting there reading newspapers that the library provided and magazines that the library provided. And as we left, they were getting ready to serve lunch through the summer lunch program. I was amazed at what all was going on in that library in the 2 hours that we were there. I think that that is happening all over this community. Our libraries are serving our residents. They're serving residents who don't have access to books, who don't have access to computers. And I want to thank you for that, the funding that you gave to allow those libraries to have more hours to serve all ages of our community. In addition to continuing that funding, which is so important to our communities across the city, I would also encourage you to support the city manager's budget for a one-time request of $2 million to provide RFID technology for our libraries. In 2011, there were already over 2,400 libraries across the country that were using RFID. Our staff processes over 28,000 items a day. That's check-in, check-out, looking for books that residents have requested. Staff at our branches spend over an hour every day dealing with searching for books, trying to get books to the residents that want them. Our central library staff spends over 2 hours a day. Our RFID would free space to provide more educational programs, both in and outside the libraries, and expansion of new and existing programs.
Thank you.
I urge you to support the manager's budget. Thank you.
Next speaker on this item. You may come forward. Please state your name and address for the record.
Yes, good morning. Mark York, Secretary Treasurer of the Dallas AFL-CIO. I live at 722 Northampton Drive, Scott Griggs, District 1. I'm speaking here on behalf of raises for our police and firefighters, our first responders, in having this in the budget. We heard the other day of where the fire department wouldn't respond to a call with a man with a wielding knife. There's a lot of these issues going on in the city of Dallas. I'm going to share another one with you. A couple weeks ago at the probation department in the south end of the city, a probationer, a felon, was seen hiding a bag outside before he went into the building. Once he went through security, they checked the bag and found a loaded handgun. They called the police four times. There was no one to respond. Can you imagine if we found a loaded handgun outside City Hall and no one would come to respond? When the man left, they gave the pistol back to the felon, which is a whole other problem which we'll have to talk with City Council about, the safety of the probation officers. It's sad when we cannot have the resources for our police and firemen to do their job. We don't pay them like our lives depend on it. I encourage around this horseshoe to find the money to pay our first responders and police to protect our women, children, and our lives. I encourage that. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Yes. Bruce Carter, 2010, Heather Glen, Dallas, Texas. I think my question is, if you take this proposed tax rate, does it lock in the percent that you are able to pay police and fire? And does it also lock in the less than 1% that you have in your proposed budget for social needs and services? One of the things that I think Dallas has tremendously failed itself is our senior citizens. They basically cast the votes, but they get the least amount of service. So when I look at your budget and you have it so heavily laden in park and recs and all these things, but in the southern sector, the crime rate is through the roof, the poverty rate is through the roof. I am a college graduate because of Dallas Firemen. They were my little league coaches that took me out of a store that allowed me to play football and do more. So my question is, does this rate lock you in at the percent you can pay police and fire? And if it does, I think it's inappropriate to propose a tax rate without having a solid number that you're going to be able to pay. And then where do you go for our seniors in the budget that you have, and how do we get there?
Next speaker on this item. There are no further speakers. Mr. Mayor, we do need a motion.
Is Mr. Warren here? We'll just go through this. Mr. Henderson here? Okay. Who else?
Continue.
Do we have anybody else, Ms. Johnson? We got Ms. Cox, Marilyn Cox, Lauren Clifton,
Jeremy Boss.
Okay. Todd Smith. Okay. All right, we'll move on. Let me kind of jump in. Anything about the budget? If anybody, excuse me? Yes. Yeah, this is why I'm letting everybody talk right now.
My name is Jimmy Hosh. I live at 6715 Rolling Vista Drive in Dallas. Mr. Mayor, I want to thank you personally for taking the leadership by signing the Mayor's Agreement on Climate Action last summer. I appreciate your leadership in recognizing that that's one of the most important items facing Dallas in the future, and especially my grandchildren. I want to thank Sandy Grayson for recognizing that we had to do something. And the first thing that has to happen to support the mayor's effort is to have a climate action plan. She took that on as a champion, and thank you, Sandy, for putting forth the amendment and finding the money to pay for it. That's commendable. I want to thank all of the members of the council, because so far you have demonstrated broad general support for the idea that we should have a climate action plan. Now, I assume that that means that you too recognize the seriousness of the situation and the linkage between environmental quality and climate action plan. The source of the pollution that we breathe every day is coming from the same source that's polluting the atmosphere and making the earth warmer. So by dealing with carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, we're dealing with the environment as well. Thank you for that generalized support. I want to thank the staff of the City Council, of the city, really, that is at this point finishing up the first action for a climate action plan, which is to develop a CO2 budget or inventory. With that, we'll know where the sources of the pollution are, and we'll begin to understand what we have to do to reduce those sources. I want to point out that the environmental groups in this city and in this county, and in fact all of North Texas, strongly believe in this activity and have their sleeves rolled up and are willing to work with the city to help develop that climate action plan. I truly hope that you will continue to support this through the budgeting process so that we can get on with it. I hate to have to go to Houston later this month and face those folks when they have been working for a year on their climate action plan, and they're going to ask me, well, how are you doing down there in Dallas? I really want to say we've started. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Let me call a few names. Martina Flores.
This man wants to speak on the budget. Go ahead. I think we've called all those folks, I think.
Good morning, Mayor. Charles Mann, 4515 Old East Dallas. I'd like to speak to the topic of paying police and firefighters a decent salary. Dallas did not come up nearly 1,000 cops short overnight. True, the pension fiasco contributed to the attrition rate, but really, it's been happening over the last several years. We have to ask ourselves why we have let this happen. Who benefits by having an undersized police force? Certainly not the average citizens. It's easy enough to say it's just something that has occurred and now must be addressed. But you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to discern the underlying causalities in the equation. There are strong elements in Dallas that want to keep it a wide open town. Some of those elements may be criminal. Some may just be cheap. Others may simply prefer a less pervasive police presence. But Dallas is not Dodge City on a Saturday night with Marshall Dillon conveniently out of town. First responders are the first reason for city government. Not tax write-offs, not big business giveaways for publicity we don't need, not beautification projects to make the well-to-do feel better about themselves. To protect and serve is the true purpose of city government. And it's time the city did something about it. If you don't, we will.
Are there any other speakers that would like to speak on this item?
All right. Thank you. All right. So, Council, let me kind of tell you how the rest of the morning is going
to... Mr. Mayor, we do need a motion to close the public hearing.
Oh. Motion second. Any discussion? Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion's carried.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let me explain what we're going to do for the rest of the morning. We are now going to get a briefing, which is really an update on the work that we did last week. So Elizabeth and her team went back and kind of got all the amendments that we were going to move forward, and she's going to tell us where we're at. At that time, then Ms. Johnson will read in to the record item 7, okay? And we will start our official actions. I'll ask Ms. Gates for a motion since budget finance. We'll get that on the table. Then we will take up amendments. I think last we talked, we said Mr. McGue was going to be working on an amendment, so entertain his amendment. And we will vote on those amendments if they get, and we'll have a record vote, okay? And those will go into it. Once we're finished with up or down amendments on that, then we will take the item up with the amendments that were passed. And that will be our the first time that we will vote on this budget. And Ms. Rice told me that what we are doing when we adopt on the first reading, what we are doing is giving the public notice of the budget as it was proposed and all the changes we've made thus far. We will publish the ordinance that has passed today for the public's review in the newspaper. By charter, we will publish a list of the changes the council made to the original city manager's proposed budgets on a separate schedule. All right. We'll finish that. Then we will hear the remainders of the open microphone speakers. We'll go into closed session. We'll have a discussion regarding the appointment of interim city attorney. We'll come back. We will vote on item 6. And we will adjourn. So that's how the morning is going to work. So with that, Ms. Wright's the, I'm sorry, Mr. City Manager, did you have something you want to say? No. Okay, Ms. Wright, the podium is yours.
Thank you. So we will pull up the PowerPoint. Here we go. Just want to review what happened last week. I'll make this very quick. On page 3, we show the First Amendment that prevailed in straw voting last week, and that's Amendment Number 19, which removed overtime for public affairs and equipment and building services to provide support to off-site council meetings after regular business hours put towards tax reduction. Then there was the Climate Action Plan Amendment using plastic bag fees and putting that towards $500,000 towards the Office of Environmental Quality and Sustainability Environmental Plan. Amendment 77 is was to remove the funding for the expanded bike lane program. The city manager's budget had expanded the funding from $500,000 to $1 million. This removes the $500,000 expansion. It left, of course, the $500,000 in the base for the bike lane program. It put it towards two uses, public safety, to be used for compensation or bonuses, and tax reduction. Amendment 69B was a technical amendment by Mr. Magoo and essentially put the money into overtime in Dallas Fire Rescue to meet minimum staffing levels, which would allow for the paramedic training to occur in the next fiscal year. Amendment 108 reduced the comprehensive compensation study funding from $1 million to $500,000, put the money towards public safety equipment. That was one-time money going to a one-time use. Amendment 109 reduced the mayor and council office budget for the district office pilots and used the money for two purposes. One was for momentum in public works, and the other was for tax reduction. So what we're going to do today is look at the budget ordinance. This budget ordinance has the city manager's recommended budget as amended by those six amendments that prevailed in straw voting and received that majority support on August 29th. Of course, you can consider additional amendments as an amendment to the motion for passage of today's budget ordinance. So on item 7, which is the budget ordinance, there'll be a motion to approve, and then you can amend that at that time, and that's how we'll consider those amendments. They will be official actions at that point with votes. After passage on the first reading, as the mayor said, we will publish this in the official newspaper of the city. But, of course, you may continue to propose amendments and can consider amendments up until the final vote on September 18th. So that is the recap of last week, and we can move into business.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you. Agenda item 7, first reading and passage of the appropriation ordinance for the proposed FY 2018-19 City of Dallas operating capital and grants and trust budgets.
Thank you. We'll entertain a motion, Mrs. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I move approval of agenda item number 7 in the passage of the FY 2018-19 appropriation ordinance on first reading with the following changes. First, use $15.3 million for the following sources. $250,000 identified last week as part of Amendment 77, $505,000 identified last week as part of the tax rate reduction through Amendment 19, 17, and 109. $1,337,721 from tax increment financing remaining funds, and $13,219,975 additional revenue by setting the property tax rate at 77.54 cents per $100 valuation, which is 25 cents less than the tax rate ceiling set by the City Council on August 22nd. But 104 cents more than the tax rate recommended by the City Manager on August 14th. Second, use the $15.3 million sources identified for the following purpose. For a cost of $7,401,537, increase pay to $59,840 for all police and fire uniform employees, effective October 1st, 2018, and for new recruits and officers upon their completion of required academy and training, and for a cost of $7,159,000, increase police and fire uniform employee compensation contingent upon signing the 2019 meet and confer agreement. I believe this can be done by January 1st, 2019. Considering the incentive of FY 2018-19 compensation for everyone tied to the agreement that would begin in the 2019-20 fiscal year. The purpose of connecting these funds and of the signing of the next meet and confer, in my opinion, will encourage meet and confer discussions to be productive, address the current use of our City of Dallas training program as a means to obtain employment elsewhere.
Point of order.
And three, help.
This is part of her motion.
Okay.
This is what they told her to read.
And three, help fix pay structure so Dallas is competitive in all areas. And four, potentially create incentives for officers to live in Dallas.
Thank you. All right, do we have a second? Okay. All right. So the motion.
I'll second for the purpose of discussion.
All right. All right, that's great. All right.
So let me just make sure what I heard her and for everybody for the council. She made a motion for item 7 with the changes that we made last week and in addition some more changes. Okay? Why don't you just take in addition the more changes and explain what you did now and not read it.
Okay. So it is on the screen. With this amendment, it takes the changes that were discussed earlier, that we agreed upon, which gets us more money that we can put towards police and fire. In addition, I found some more funds from TIF dollars. Also, because I believe it's the will of the body to take advantage of some of the capacity with the increased tax rate, but I just took a cent of that tax rate. I think we could go up a cent and a half from the new high end that was established with the vote a couple weeks ago. But I took a cent of that and also used it to police and fire. Which we've heard, and I heard this from my town hall meetings, that they thought the community, we needed to prioritize starting salary. So it does the starting salary. It finds a little bit of a savings because the starting salary increase of $59,840 is not implemented until academy training is completed. And that's when it would bump up, which I think other cities do practice that. The rest of the dollars that we found could be used to do cross-the-board raises, and I tied those raises just to the meet and confer that would start in the 19-20 fiscal year. And why I did this is because I feel like this is an opportunity to not only fix what's going on currently with recruitment and retainment, but then we can get everybody at the table and have productive discussions and have security for 3 years following. This would be the first time I think we have compensation outside of a meet and confer, which my council colleagues I think are supportive of. But if we link it to the next meet and confer, all that money would still be available in this budget. But if we link it to the signage of that, which I think is very similar to Mr. Magoo's, because he's not implementing anything till January 1st, then it would give us everybody the opportunity to really shore up and fix some of the other issues that we've been discussing, the issues related to that we've spent almost $1 million on trainees that have walked out the door within days of graduation. We could potentially address the idea of incentives related to living in Dallas. I'm not supportive of mandatory, but the idea of incentives would be something we can incorporate and meet and confer. So all this money would be available this year, but it would just be tied to getting everybody in the same room, and then we could have security related to recruitment and retention. And we, as a body, wouldn't be negotiating the compensation for our first responders at the Horseshoe on an annual basis.
Thank you. Discussion, Mr. Felder.
So I like one of the pieces of your proposal with regard to the pay and retention. And also, I think you said something about, did you say something about relocation? Yes, I like that. However, I'd like to offer a friendly amendment on that and to take out at least $312,696 for code enforcement officers.
Mr. Felder, I can't support that because I don't think it has support from the whole council.
All right. Well, thank you.
So, Mr. Mayor, I have an alternative.
Ms. McHugh, I'm sorry.
I have an alternative amendment.
Okay, so a substitute amendment. Thank you.
Okay, it was what was submitted and circulated early this morning or late last night, however you look at it. And it includes on the use of funds side, it leaves intact the amendment that we passed last week relating to the paramedic training. But within that, we had taken out the promotional testing. Those, at least for the battalion chiefs and the captains, as I understand it, need to be put back in because of the expiration time. That is the $36,160 for the battalion chiefs. It's $38,200 for the captains. Additionally, on the use of funds, the need to address the backup set of bunker gear that is currently in the city manager's one-time plan for the following 2 years, to escalate that to the tune of $250,000, because there has been some interest in potentially private funding to help match or come alongside that. And so I think it's important for the city to have some money and escalate that as soon as we can. To the pay issues, that we will never be able to pay our police and fire what they're worth or deserve, but it is important, and I've heard from our constituents that we need to raise the starting salaries as it relates to recruiting. That number, as best I can tell from consensus around this council, is to 60,000, not less than 60, but 60. That would be effective on the first pay period after January 1. The use of funds there is $7,268,267. Additionally, for those not impacted by the $60,000 starting salary increase, a 3% across the board. Also effective the first pay period, January 1, 2019, that use of funds is $7,935,647 for a total use of $15,528,274. The source of funds, I went through each of the amendments from last week that impacted public safety, and there is, as it relates to reducing a comprehensive study from $1 million to $500,000, that is a $500,000 source of funds. The mayor and council district office pilot reduction, Ms. Gates' amendment 109 had $180,000. The public affairs office, or whatever that's called, off-site meetings reduction of $75,000. It also addresses restoring the money to the bike lane expansion that we had pulled out in an amendment last week, but restoring that here. And a property tax rate, which further reduces the tax rate approved by council of 0.7779 in the amount of $1,651,657 to a new rate of appears to be 77.67 per hundred valuation, which is a 0.12 cent reduction from the previously voted on cap, for a total source of funds of
$15,528,274. Second. All right, so let's just be clear. You, Ms. Gates made a motion for item 7, and the amendment was in that same motion. So we've got to do this differently. You need to make a substitute motion for item 7 and what you just did.
So let the record reflect that I did that.
Okay. Is that right, Tammy? Okay, great. Okay. Discussion, Mr. Kleinman. Excuse me, Ms. McHugh. Did you want to say something?
So just really, I want to thank all the folks around the council that have put input into this. This is not, I think everybody wants to pay our police and fire more. I think everybody around this horseshoe has dug in to figure out ways to make additional cuts and add. And there's been some really intense battles on the amounts and where this should come from. And I think we've pushed the limits at least under this budget as it is right now. By name, I know Councilmember Callahan and Adkins have spent a great deal of time. I know Councilmember Griggs and Medrano have also put a lot of effort into this, and as well as everybody else. I just wanted to thank you all for working on this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinman.
Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I think when we look at these two budget amendments, we have to consider what we're getting in return for this. Unfortunately, Mr. Magoo's amendment, while well-conceived, does not really do anything for us as a council. This is really a dangerous precedent to negotiate salaries around the horseshoe. We are undermining our city manager's ability to work with his employees, and we are falling subject to political pressure from these different associations. And people need to recognize that and acknowledge if you're falling to that. Nevertheless, when we look at these two amendments, at least Ms. Gates' amendment has language in there to get something in return, and that's how a negotiation works. It's not one-sided. At least in her amendment, it's clear that we have some public policy decisions that we'd like addressed and meet and defer, such as encouraging our sworn officers to live in the city of Dallas, addressing officers leaving after they get the training off the backs of our taxpayers, addressing pay structure and other incentives. At least we're trying to get something in return for this around the horseshoe negotiation that we're having with the associations that we're taking away from our city manager. So of the two, while I'm not sure I'll vote for either amendment because they both call for a tax increase, and I certainly don't want to be a poster child for a tax increase in this city, I think given the choice, we ought to at least ask for something in return. The reality is we're not going to stop the whining. We're just not. We did meet and confer last year, or 2 years ago, which included five step increases in 3 years. Five. Approximately 25% increase in salaries. Did that stop the whining? Not for a minute. So anybody that has a child knows when you give into a tantrum, you're just enabling another tantrum. So I won't be supporting either of these because of it. It puts the burden on the taxpayers as well as it causes us to upset a process that we have for meet and confer. With that being said, I can see possibly getting behind at least a better starting salary so we can start working towards that recruitment item. And I do have a question for staff. Do these both the starting salary proposals include making up the difference for some current officers that may be below that starting salary?
Both proposals include increasing anybody on the force currently making below $60,000 to 59,840 or to 60.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I'm happy to second Mr. McGee's substitute motion, and I would like to thank our public safety chairman, Mr. McGee, for his hard work and diligence in preparation of these amendments. I also want to thank Councilmember Adkins for his contribution and also myself, the role that we played, and others. We have collaborated really from the beginning, in our view, to get this right, to be able to raise that starting salary. That has been the goal throughout, and I think that this motion achieves that. I would also really like to thank Elizabeth Raich and Jack Ireland and their team for their outstanding assistance in preparation of this information. I believe that this is the right thing to do because I asked both chiefs, you know, what the central issue was in going out and recruiting and retaining the youngest officers, and they all said, without hesitation, said, it's the starting salary. So without any smoke and mirrors or anything else, we chose to say, let's solve that problem by finding a pot of money to raise that starting salary $60,000. Obviously, we can't solve all the challenges that are before us in the public safety arena, but we can make a good faith down payment towards that. This gives us a running start to the new meet and confer agreement so we can begin to repair or improve those steps, redo those, and also make other improvements in that meet and confer. Many of you know that we're behind the eight ball when it comes to providing public safety dollars, but this goes a long way to doing something to keep our promise to these hard-working men and women that serve in those areas. You know, we have that 1% to DART. You know, that is a choice that we made, a Metropolitan Transit Authority, to move people. And because of that, we don't have the funds. So Dallas and Houston and other major metropolitan cities, they don't have 2 cents on the sales tax available to us. But we're making tough choices. I hope the public safety employees and others recognize that. 60% of our budget goes there. Obviously, with the pension fix, we had some heavy lifting and pay referendum lawsuit and other things. So I think we're showing a good faith step towards trying to make these improvements, and that's why I'm very much in favor of this amendment. I would have liked to have had a larger decrease in the tax rate, but to be able to do the things that we needed to do right now to make us competitive, that's why I chose to get on board with this. So, again, I would like to applaud Mr. McGee and Mr. Atkins for their help. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. And I think it's dangerous to continue on the downward slope that we're on with respect to public safety and the stage of this public safety crisis we're in, where we have essentially huge amounts of overtime funding our fire and rescue. Overtime this last year is going to top $25 million. With police officers stretched so thin, what we're seeing is call times continue to rise, not only for the priority one calls, which aren't where we want them, but the other priority calls, the calls keep coming up. And we're seeing a real decrease in real-time policing, where our police officers are just essentially mop up and getting their, not able to get there on time to do real-time policing because we don't have enough. I'm very supportive of Councilmember Magoo's amendments. I appreciate him taking in my feedback on them and working on it. I have proposed an amendment 116, which is up there, which would.
So are you making a substitute motion?
No, I'm just talking right now.
Okay,
you,
got it. You want to put his?
Just up there. I'm just going to make a couple comments.
Put his 116 up, please.
It's right there. It's 116.
There we go.
You have a copy.
There
it is. Oh, you don't have it completed. Here's one from yesterday. I printed up extras just in case. Just to be prepared. But I'm just going to make some comments on it. It would, again, hit the economic development pilot funds as well as some TIF funds. It's the same as Mr. Magoo's with those two changes. And I don't believe right now there's the support for it, so I'm going to vote with Mr. Magoo's and see where that goes. And if his certainly fails, then I will bring up mine. But mine, the only difference is it would get them to 4% across the board as opposed to the 3% across the board, which Adam and Goo has worked on the compromise for.
Thank you. Ms. Gates, you haven't spoken on this motion yet, so you can go ahead and speak.
Thank you, Mayor. I mentioned I could support Mr. Magoo's, but if you could incorporate that this trigger associated with the meet and confer. I think yours starts January 1st. Is that correct? So, Mr. Fortune, are you set to start negotiations? And as I mentioned earlier, I won't repeat myself, but I think this is an opportunity that we can not only do something today, but we can do something to stabilize the future. And so we'll have certainty for all of our residents that it's not going to be just now. I'm sorry, Mr. Fortune, I didn't let you answer. So, but that, are you ready to start negotiations?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, we are.
So I think it would engage the city manager in that process. They'd have it from now until January 1st. And then we could give all of the rank and file certainty that we're going to take care of them this year with this money, and then we're going to take care of them going forward. That's going to help with recruit and retention. And then it's going to give all of the community that I've been hearing, they don't want a Band-Aid for just this year. They want something that they can be secure to be sit in our city. So
I'm going to compromise. I think you're putting back the $500,000 for the bike lanes, too. Is that right? So we're going to put bike lanes ahead of – I had them going to public safety, but we're going to do that so we can get compromise. And I'm just asking for the one thing that I mentioned to you last Wednesday that I sent you on the amendment. I got the First Amendment out there that included that. So if you could entertain that as with it so I can support this.
If you can grab – So the answer is no.
And can you tell me why that's a negative?
Mr. Several people are going to get – can you use Mr. Kingston's mic? Mr. Kleinman, can you get off? No, it screwed up. So Mr. Kingston went off. That's all right. Go jump on, Mr. McGue.
We're afraid of meeting.
And Mr. Callahan, if you'll jump off. Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead. Yes, please. Did you ask him a question?
Go ahead. Why? Yeah, because this is there's been a lot of work and effort going into this. I think we'd have to go renegotiate and talk about all the other issues that are going on right now. I'm not sure you can tie, I'm not sure you can have the springing clause. I guess we could have a legal discussion about that too. We can figure that out if that's part of it.
Okay.
I'm not going to support it.
Yeah. Okay. Ms. Grayson. Yeah.
Thank you, Mayor. Could I ask Mr. McGue a question or two?
Please. Ms. Gates and Mr. Kleinman.
Okay.
Good.
Adam, you used Amendment 109 that was identified as tax reduction, but it wasn't all tax reduction. It was $75,000 for the Momentum program, and then the rest of it, the $180,000, was for tax reduction. So technically, the $255,000 didn't include all of that for tax reduction.
Yes, ma'am. I left out the Momentum portion, so it stays where it was.
I see.
And
180.
Right.
Okay, I see. I'm sorry,
and
I missed that.
It technically does go to tax reduction because we're increasing the tax reduction, or it's tax reduction of $1.65 million.
Does it leave the $75,000
yes.
in for the Momentum,
Your Momentum
program?
Is protected.
Thank you.
You know I knew better.
Mr. Thomas.
Thanks, Mayor. I want to commend Councilmember Gates and her hard work, and Councilmember McGue and his hard work on this. I talked with Councilmember McGue, who chairs the Public Safety Criminal Justice Committee. I've talked with John. I've attempted to talk with Chief Hall just to say, point blank, what do you need? What is it that we'll be able to recruit and retain the officers? And, you know, it's been a variety of responses. Of course, money is always a motivating factor, but I trust that Councilmember Gould's motive has been about what can we do that's the best interest of the city and the best interest of addressing this as relates to public safety. I saw it was almost midnight when I received this email. Well, because we all got copied on it, received the email with this amendment, so that says he spent all night, not to mention how much time yesterday working on this. And I respect chairs of committees. If you bring the committee brings something forward, I believe that the chair has spent the time to discuss it and get feedback and input on it. And because this addresses so many different issues and concerns, someone approached me just yesterday about the bike lane, funding for the bike lane. One of our colleagues, and what can we do in order to continue that moving forward? This addresses that, and so I will be supporting this amendment. Thank you, Mr. McGue, for your hard work.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
I also want to thank Mr. Gu for his hard work, and at 2:23 this morning, I was still getting email from Mr. McGue and said, hey, you know I don't sleep at night, so, but the key is for someone work 24/7 on this project and trying to make sure that we do have a balanced act, not just hearing from the colleagues, but also hearing from Chief Hall and the chief, the fire chief, And also, Jack and Elizabeth, thank you for working, you know, all weekend, you know, as of yesterday. I know Ms. Magoo left my office, my committee meeting at 10:30 to meet with you to try to get these numbers. And we finally got a number this morning, what is the magic number. But, again, I hear from Chief Holland and say, hey, we need to increase the starting pay. But I also hear from Chief Holland say we also need to retain some of our seniors. And many, many years ago, that we started a drop program in order to keep our senior officer, and we let it go too long. We should have cut it off early, but we didn't. We are learning from our mistake, but also we are a great city, and to be a safe city, safety is first. You know, I had 6 town hall meetings. The number one thing in the survey is say, hey, we want to pay our police officer. 6 town hall meetings. That was number one. Number two was fire. And my citizen and my resident is complaining and say, hey, we need to have a safe city. We need to have more police officers on the street. And I think that Ms. Magoo, your work, and Rick Callahan, you talking, Casey Thomas, you know, talking to me and say, hey, we got to do what we think is best for the city. We also got to do what the citizen sent us down here to do. And the citizens said, we want a safe city. In order to retain those police officers, we got to pay them the right amount of money. But also it's a shame that we need to figure this out, that when we do pay these police officers money, they will not leave, go somewhere else. That's a question. When we do pay them, we got to make sure we maintain them and retain them to stay. We should have been learning from many, many years ago that every time we train a police officer, 60,000, 90,000, 100,000, what is that magic number going to be? We done lost a whole lot of money. Millions and millions of dollars we have lost because we train in other city, use our training facility to lure their officer and their firemen to their city. Again, thank you, Mr. Magoo. I support you wholeheartedly.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Magoo, for your amendment that I'd be very happy to support. I think I don't want to repeat what my colleagues have said around the horseshoe, but you've all made very good points about this amendment and appreciate your contribution to it. The thing that I wanted to bring to the attention of the public, really, when they're considering whether we're making a good decision on sending this on this first reading of the budget that informs the citizens what it is we intend to pass on the 18th. We want you to come down here and tell us all of your thoughts, but when you're considering whether you're getting bang for your buck in terms of these are your tax dollars, this council cares about your tax dollars, this will be the third year in a row that we've cut the rate, we're the smallest part of your property tax bill, and we're trying to give you value for your money. Here's something to remember. Yesterday, management brought to us from the budget office budget adjustments. During the year, we adjust our budget based on savings that happen in some departments and overages that happen in other departments. They're things we can't anticipate. A lot of times I can't anticipate what's going to happen next week. So it's not unreasonable for good city management to need to adjust the budget throughout the year. So that was brought to us. It's very important that City Council have oversight over those changes so that the spending of the city actually matches the budget we voted for. That's what they were trying to do. Those adjustments included moving millions of dollars from the Dallas Police Department to the Dallas Fire Rescue Department, because Dallas Fire Rescue is disturbingly over its overtime budget. And the reason for that is that we have an incredibly overworked paramedic response in this city. So what we are doing is, because we do not have sufficient firefighters to cover all the health care and fire needs of the city, we are paying massive overtime to make sure that you still get good response when you call 911 for an ambulance or because your house is on fire. And we're able to accomplish that by spending a whole lot of your money. On the police side, we're beyond that. We can't actually spend more overtime. We can't actually spend all the money we have in the budget for DPD because they're stretched so thin, we don't have the ability to backfill with overtime. So here's what you're getting. You're paying through the nose for excellent fire rescue service, and we can't actually deploy all the tax money you agreed to let us spend on police because we don't have enough of them. So the result is your priority two calls are actually sometimes just not even being responded to. So anybody who says this isn't a crisis is not reading these numbers very carefully. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question for Ms. Raich. We discussed one in my amendment. I included, I think it was $1.3 million that for 1.337. That was a one-time cost, and you were concerned about that because TIF money that we found that we could utilize, that it wasn't sustainable, so I was creating a structural deficit, but it was a small amount. Is there any structural deficit related to the amendment that we're considering right now, Mr. Magoo's amendment?
Yes, it is balanced for the next year. However, because the pay raises go into effect January 1st, in the following fiscal year, we would need full year funding to make those pay increases. So this amendment creates an immediate gap in the following fiscal year, and I've talked about this with Mr. Magoo, so he knows what I'm about to say, of $5.244 million. So what we would know after adopting this budget, if this amendment were in it, is that going into needing to budget for FY 2019-20, we have to find $5.244 million. And so that's not unheard of necessarily. This year we had, of course, the school crossing guard program that came into it. And so the city manager will bring a balanced budget the following year, but it may require some very tough decisions. So I think it's helpful for the public and for council to just know what you're walking into in terms of the next year, that the city manager brought a balanced biennial budget. This amendment takes that out of balance and gives us a deficit or a gap in the following fiscal year that we'll need to find a way to fill.
And in this fiscal year, we'll also be trying to negotiate the meet and confer that could be impacting that budget.
It could, yes.
I mean, that would,
I would imagine
that
it would.
Would be impacting that budget.
Right.
So, which I can, again, Mr. Magoo, I can agree to it, because I think we need to address this now. But I am concerned about that deficit, and I'm concerned about the limitations it gives us related to the meet and confer. And, again, is why I just would ask for you to have to encourage those negotiations so we understand what that deficit is going to be like. And I think it also is a message to the rest of the parts of the budget that they will need to be cut to make up for this gap, which.
Thank you. Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First question is, I'd like to ask for a friendly motion to separate the starting salary from all the other items on here. Sorry? Will not accept that. Okay. And then I also wanted to ask a question maybe to you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Magoo said he negotiated with the associations, and I want to know which council – responsibility to him as opposed to the city manager.
Okay, he said he negotiated.
Can you get him on? Who did he negotiate with?
Okay. Come on, guys.
I want to know.
I appreciate that. You can take it offline and ask him. Okay.
Okay. Well, okay. So if he's not negotiating with the associations, who would it be?
I guess I don't know. Okay. I'll let him speak for himself.
Can I ask him directly?
You can. He can answer or not. Okay. All right, Mr. Magoo, would you like to hit your light?
So he's saying he negotiated with council members, but he certainly did not respond to any of my requests for communication on this topic. I guess I'm just really concerned that we're not getting any return. So can I ask Mr. Magoo what we're getting in return for this negotiation?
Yeah, your time's up. He's spoken. His point of view is on the record.
His point of view is that we're getting nothing in return.
Okay. His point of view is on the record.
Thank you.
Okay. His point of view. Guys, stop.
See, people won't put
Mr. Callahan. Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor, for round two. Again, this ought to be relatively easy for us to do because, you know, we're saving now for having approximately 600 to 800 less officers. That's one thing. Also, we're going to a newer savings from less dollars contributed to overtime pay. So those two factors really is what should enable us to do this. Those that are concerned about the cuts in the next biennial cycle, the next year, you know, we've got 13 days, Council, and I challenge us to go and glean from this budget other potential cuts that we can utilize to be able to help put that into balance. And I think there's dollars there. I think we're, Elizabeth, about $2 million out, $2 million 5, something like that, to put into balance. Is it $5 million or $2 million?
I'm not sure what you're...
I'm talking about to put next
year... Oh, that we need? 5.244.
Say that one more time.
$5.244 million.
$5.244. So I think there's potential dollars there for us to do that, and I challenge our folks to do it. We've, I think, cut $700,000 or $800,000 generally, and I think there's more to be done. I did not want to really engage and go after the city manager's budget. I thought it was a very solid budget, but... The central question continued to scream, and that was about the pay.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins.
Yes. Ms. Rachel, Elizabeth, great information that you gave Ms. Gates. When we balance a budget, you know, this is not my first rodeo. You know, we don't have many budget that we balance on September the 30th. On October the 1st, we... $80 million over, $26 million over. This is not the first time. And for $5 million, sound great. It was just $5 million over the next time in the budget cycle. I got confidence in our city manager, and I got a confidence in this in the council around here that we are going to come up with a great balanced budget. But also, the citizen asked for be safe. And that's the question. You know, the citizen has to be safe. And also, the chief asked they need more money to keep the police here. And that's the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. Mr. Kleiman, do you have like 15 seconds or something?
I just have a question for Mr. Magoo. I just want to know what we're getting in return
for
this negotiated deal.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Got it.
And won't discuss around the horseshoe. So it's an abomination to democracy.
Thank you.
We won't discuss issues around the horseshoe.
Thank you.
Back office negotiations in dark, smoky rooms.
Okay. Smoky. All right. Thank you. Obviously, I think this is a legitimate discussion to be having. Our public safety is for this city is very, very important. I am proud of what has happened with crime in the city over the last years, and we've got to make sure that we continue to have a strategy that not only brings that crime down, but make sure that we are responsive to the other calls that we get as well. The person I'm most curious about how they feel about this is our city manager. This is a big change in our budget. And so, Mr. Broad, next, would you kind of give us your thoughts?
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate the opportunity. It's been great, I think, listening this last hour and a few minutes. Thanks for calling on me, actually, for my comments and thoughts on it. And so I think, you know, when I reflect back, one, on the proposed budget, I just recall last year sitting at the dais with the conversation around not giving the council the opportunity, I think, preemptively to talk to me and give me guidance on how I came in and situated the budget as it relates to tax rates. And with some brevity, there was a discussion about ensuring next year that we considered looking at a tax rate reduction. And so I think staff, as well as myself, went about developing this budget in that spirit, obviously listening to council around many of your key priority areas, which I'm hopeful you see reflected in the budget. And I think I've heard throughout that this is a pretty responsible budget. And so as we get here to this year and we began to talk about, I think, the central theme of this budget and the biggest concern, obviously, by the community is public safety and where we are from a staffing perspective, and a lot of dialogue around recruitment and retention. And I think the efforts throughout this last 3 weeks to try to figure out, in my mind, what level of funding needs to be reserved for that type of capacity to have an ability to be able to address those issues, I think has been heartfelt and very good dialogue. And I think where we are today, at least with the proposal, is consistent with what I would think is the role of the city council, and that's to define the level of resources to really get at policy issues. And those policy issues are how we better recruit and retain and what effect that will have on the broader city and public safety. I think if there's anything around that discussion that concerns me is the fact that we do have a meet and confer agreement in place now that has one more year remaining that we have recommended as part of this budget, the final year of that, which increases salaries to the tune of over the next year and a half, $40 million. And thirdly, we're beginning the process of negotiation very shortly. I think the part that I would be more concerned about, quite honestly, and y'all know me, and I like to speak at least and get it off my chest because you're doing your duty and I guess I need to do mine, is that we do meet and confer and we get in a room for a reason, and that's to negotiate. To do that at this level of specificity in open forum around this dais and prescribe to me and my team specifically where we need to start, I think it's problematic. And for the future, I don't know what it says for our ability to be able to respectfully I won't say bargain because it's different than bargaining, but to be able to do that successfully, I think putting those kind of hamstrings on your city manager, you know, I guess the results will bear out when it comes to ultimately what we're able to do as part of a new agreement. But with eyes on the future, regardless of where this vote goes, there will be fiscal impacts. And obviously, the issue of even being 700 to 800 officers, if you follow the numbers, short, that's $60 million in and of itself, give or take a few hundred thousand dollars, not including the other costs associated with that. So, again, we're going to have some serious issues going forward regardless of today's action. But I think the most disconcerting part, again, is the specificity of, I think, council's respective role in managing pay in class, particularly as it relates to something that's negotiated and meet and confer, is the only thing I would say. But again, I support our officers. I think we are going to have to figure out how we do better. I think the funding sources have been identified, quite honestly, and that's where it should have been left, is provided me with the level of dollars and advised me kind of how you wanted me to proceed. But to be that specific in a budget amendment, obviously you needed to get the support of the council and clarity around what that is. But I think that would probably be the most disconcerting part about this. But again, I think this is a good budget. Appreciate council's due diligence. And quite honestly, you know, if you ask me to achieve a goal, it's my job to do it. And I think I've been proven capable to do that. I don't particularly need to be micromanaged and told exactly what to go do, because I don't think that is good for the process and or consistent with the role of the city council when it comes to that type of governance. Thank you.
Thank you. I agree with the city manager. I think this is a bad step for the city council to take a step to decide to negotiate contracts around him or her, if it was a lady. So I will not be supporting this. He doesn't allow him to deal with issues like Mr. Felder's brought up about how do we have officers live in this environment. It creates a hole for us next year, and I just think that's fiscally irresponsible. And then third, it treats police and fire exactly the same, and we've already heard both chiefs speak about their different issues and how they need to spend money in different ways to solve those problems for those reasons. Now, you can argue the whole point about the tax rate or police, okay? I got it. I mean, we're spending more money. But for those reasons, I'm having problems. If we do spend more tax rate, I agree with Mr. Kleinman, we need to get something out of it. And I think we all agree in what Mr. Callahan said, we want to solve this problem, okay? So I think what we're saying is we need more officers. We need more retention. So, Ms. Reich, Ms. McGue gave you some numbers. You calculated those numbers on how many officers did we increase next year versus the original city manager's budget?
None. It is calculated on the number of officers in the city manager's budget.
So we are going to spend all this money, okay? This is the part where I do the Kabuki Theater and act like I'm so surprised, okay, like we all do, okay, as city council people, okay? We're going to spend all this money saying this is our biggest issue. My God, we can't get, you know, police officers to help our firemen. We can't do this. We need to spend more money. But we're not going to get any more. That's fascinating to me. Now, either it's bad financial projections or it's ill thought out in the premise. And that's why you let the city manager do their job. Look, if that'd be a trade. It's like, you know, Mayor, if we spend this money, we're going to be able to hire net 300, 400 more officers next year. I'd go, okay, now there's a trade we need to kind of think about. But I don't even get to make that trade. So I think this is a little slapdash, as I've said before. You know, I think this is a blunt instrument trying to solve a very, very nuanced and delicate issue. And it's politics, and it will be what it is. But structurally, we just have to, the public needs to know that this is not solid. This is not for police or against police like everybody wants it to be. It's about being good fiscal stewards or not being good fiscal stewards at the same time making our citizens safer. So that's my point of view. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it, as they all said. Ms. Gates, did you want to say something else? Well, you've already talked, and Ms. McGue has not had his 1 minute. Okay? So, Ms. McGue, you get your 1 minute. Did you want to do it that way? Did you want to make progress on this?
So, you know what?
I think
we should at least be honest in all these comments.
Great.
And Mr. Broadnex and Ms. Raich have said from the beginning, if we can hire more officers, that we will hire as many officers as we possibly
right.
can. And we have the funding to do so, or they will find it.
Where is this funding?
That's what they've said every time. We've had this discussion 4 times, and you've been sitting there listening to it.
So, now, with that question, that was directed to the mayor.
No, I was the one that asked questions.
No, I just want to make sure. I don't,
Mr. McGue.
I didn't say anything out of turn on that.
No,
so,
sir.
Listen, I think, again, I'm going to say we'll find the money, but because that sounds too easy. But when you manage a $1.2 billion budget, of which public safety is 60% of it, I understand the cost of public safety and understand how to budget. And so we'll find a way to get there, and I'll bring you at some point, if that is the reality we face, the difficult choices that I'm hopeful to help you make to be able to explain the factors associated with those changes. And I guess that's one thing that we're committed to do. But honestly, I don't want to have, for example, when people say, and we've had this conversation last year, we need to put in the budget for 500 more officers. Let's say I did that. That's $50 million I have to call today, and we'd have to make tough choices that we might not have to make today if we can't get there, that I will bring to you when, in fact, we start to approach that so we can make those choices in the moment. So, again, my commitment is there. And I'd say this, the only thing different that I would say about any perspective on my feelings about this is this. If council said, hey, this is what we're going to do with the budget, city manager, and we'd like to see you do X, Y, and Z with it, with salaries and that, figure out how to go do that, bring that back to us in some form or fashion. I guess, as I've learned in amendments and resolutions and things that we approve, if it's so prescriptive, it takes away the flexibility and creativity, and then I have to come back to amend whatever it is we did before we even got there. That's my only hesitation, is that it kind of limits us in our ability to think bigger and better than what you might be prescribing today, and I always shoot for something better that's accommodating, that's going to get council what they want. That's my only issue.
And I appreciate that, and we have not been having these discussions in a vacuum. We've been trying to figure out what is the best movement as it relates to future negotiations. You ask what we get for this. We're getting a starting salary now that is not only competitive but higher than our surrounding neighbors. We are recruiting. I mean, what else? We don't have another tool from this horseshoe to figure out how to help with recruiting other than to increase the starting salary. That's what we're doing. We are helping those that have been impacted by the increases in pension costs and everything else we've been doing. We've secured the pension for the foreseeable future. We've paid off the pay referendum lawsuit. We are telling our police and fire that we care, that we're doing everything in our power to get the budgetary impact to take care of these folks. And so that's all we can do in this situation, and we're doing it, and I feel proud about that.
Thank you. Mr. Clayton hadn't spoken, so you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wasn't going to speak, but I had some questions coming out of the deliberations. Mr. Fortune, do you mind coming to the microphone, please? So my question is the difference between Mr. McGee and Mrs. Gates' memo, budget amendment. So under Ms. Gates' amendment, when would the pay effect, I just want to make sure I'm reading it right, when would it go into effect?
If I understand both amendments, they would both go into effect in January.
I believe Ms. Gates was October.
And you can
the starting pay increase was effective October 1.
The starting pay would happen immediately. And then the benefits could happen if they signed the meet and confer, they could start even sooner than that. Because I think we need to be addressing this immediately.
So what happens if what happens if meet and confer goes south? Let's say it goes to June. How does that affect the pay?
I can't speak to both amendments in that regard. Let me just tell you a little bit of fundamentally what happened. We have an agreement that goes through the end of September of 2019. So in theory, we have up until that point to negotiate an agreement. If I understand the amendments that are proposed today, we have one which is contingent on signing that agreement for October 2019 forward by January 1st of 2019. And so while we anticipate sitting down and having those discussions starting in September this month, we wanted to do that so that we would have plenty of time to have any budgetary impact known before the next budget cycle. And so I think that's the difference between the two amendments, is the January 1 contingency that's a part of Mrs. Gates' amendment versus there is no contingency as related to Mr. Magoo's amendment.
Okay. I will say to our city manager, I think the one thing that I think is expressed differently is I think you came to us with a very sincere budget. I think you came to us from this perspective of you heard last year from this council, get taxes down because that's what our citizens told us. I don't love this process because I don't love going outside of meet and confer. I think what we did here as the will of the council, as the will of our people is if we would have had this discussion 6 weeks ago, I wouldn't even have entertained it. But then I went to my budget town hall meetings and they said, no matter what, do this, even if it requires raising taxes. That's not a you problem. That's an us problem. And that's why we have budget town halls, is to listen to our folks when they say we want something different than what you proposed. So I think it's important to say that because I feel like I don't want it to come across, at least from my perspective, that whatever we choose to do on this, that we're admonishing you. I think it's absolutely us listening to our customers and our customers saying, no matter what, this is what we want to do. But I wish we could do this in meet and confer, but I recognize that we're not at that stage because we do have an emergency. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs. Second round.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll say first off to the public, the budget under the city charter and the power of the citizens have vested in this council. The city council receives a city manager's proposed budget, and the work that you're seeing us do is the work that we are asked to do under the city charter. For anyone to say anything different is completely wrong. This is one of the council's most important responsibilities, maybe the most important responsibility, is the work on the budget. And the charter says the buck stops with this council. City manager works on a proposed budget. He turns it into the council. He did a fantastic job, so did his entire team. But the work from that point is completely up to this city council. And these types of amendments are an example of the hard work that our citizens have asked us to do and that we are doing and that we ought to do. And this is what is expected of us. And this is good governance under our city charter. This is us taking responsibility and accountability as elected officials for the oath that we took and to fulfill our duties under the charter. It is nothing different. If anyone says anything different, they are completely wrong. And also, we got to look at this. This is just basic economics and fiscal responsibility.
Thank you. Thank you. I just hope, I just would love you guys to give me one thing, and that is to tell the citizens that we're going to make progress on this issue and that the numbers in the budget are not what it's going to be, that we're actually going to hire and retain more officers. I just hope we're all aligned around that. We spend more money, we're going to make headway because that's what people have been wanting, okay? So we can't say, well, we're not going to make progress, and we're going to spend a lot more money. Ms. Gates, you've already spoken twice.
Do you guys have a question about the product? I mean, what happens next?
Well, we've got a vote, and then you can ask your question.
But is this the final budget? Or
no. As I said earlier, all right, let me just do this. All right, we're gonna take this up. She's going to post it. And then we'll vote on September 18th, and that'll be the final vote, okay? Mr. Felder, you haven't spoken twice.
Yes. So I agree that we do need to increase the pay for police and fire. I also would like to see a retention and relocation bonuses put in these negotiations because it's very important to have police and fire, especially the new officers. I'm not expecting veterans officers to move in. And I'm not saying require. I'm saying heavily incentivize those new recruits to live in the city of Dallas. Because when you have officers that live in the city limits, and I also want to see them have police cars. If you see those police cars in the neighborhood, crime goes down. If you see the police officers in the grocery stores and everywhere in the community, crime goes down. And so we have to have those discussions as well. So I'm all for the raises, but I'm also for some buy-in from the police officers to have their new recruits buy into the city of Dallas, buy homes, and we need to heavily incentivize that so that we get that process started. I think that's very important.
Thank you.
In this city. Thank you.
Thank you. That is not in the amendment we're voting on at this point. Please, roll call.
When I call your name, please state yes if you're in favor or no if you're opposed. Mayor Rawlings?
No. Yes, this is the Mr. McGue's. No.
Mayor Pro Tem Thomas?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano?
Yes.
Councilmember Griggs?
Yes.
Councilmember Callahan?
Yes.
Councilmember Narvaez?
Yes.
Councilmember Felder?
Yes.
Councilmember Atkins?
Yes.
Councilmember Clayton?
Yes.
Councilmember McGue?
Yes.
Councilmember Kleinman?
No.
Councilmember Grayson?
Yes.
Councilmember Gates? Councilmember Kingston? With 11 voting in favor, 3 opposed, the motion passes.
Okay. So with that work, we will take off next Tuesday, okay, and we will vote on this on the 18th, and on the 18th we will also have the briefing of the Fair Park Management Agreement at that time.
May I ask a question, though? That was a vote on the amendment or a vote on the underlying?
The whole item.
All right, very
with
good.
The amended item seven.
That's good. We will take up our afternoon speakers.
Thank you. I'll start by reciting the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Rawlings only. Also, if you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. We had several changes to the speakers list. Therefore, we will begin with Dolores Phillips. Dolores Phillips, 3101 Luxor Way, Dallas, Texas, 75233. You do have handouts. One is from the email that I sent you in case it was intercepted before you received it in your inbox. Also, it is also a copy of the Holliner bill that was from Green Oaks, October 25th through 28th, 2013. Mayor Rollins, when DPD and the city attorney's office released 25 minutes of the two-hour-plus video, two of those video clips are actually the same clip overlapping each other with different time stamps. I'm asking City Manager Broadnax, City Attorney Castro, or whomever has taken his place, Mayor Rollins, can you please reimburse Holliner and Green Oaks for the stay at Green Oaks because it was premeditated to be a false arrest. It was retaliation because I continued to speak of a cover-up from 2009, which means now it is a cover-up within a cover-up. I'm asking the FBI, Homeland Security, CIA, who is here now because of the incident that happened at Channel 4, to force and compel the City Attorney's Office, City of Dallas, and DPD to release the 2 hours of video from the meeting that Mayor Rollins instructed 2 to 3 weeks prior to 10/25/2013. Mary Felice Lewis Thorne, who is no longer here, who passed away, I was told by arresting officer Herbert Cotner that she passed away October 2017. She went downstairs to Carrie Jefferson to intercept court documents that would have been retrieved from me directly after leaving the meeting October 25th, 2013. I'm asking you to release. This is public business. It is now more than a few lawsuits filed against the City of Dallas and Dallas Police Department for being retaliatory because, and this is bigger than minorities, because the City of Dallas and DPD has a history of retaliation when people speak of injustices. I'm asking you to do the right thing because if it had not been for a false police report and a false arrest, there would be no Green Oaks. I'm asking you to do the right thing. I'm going to contact the CIA and Homeland Security while they are here and ask them to contact you to compel you to release the video of October 25th, 2013. And I believe that that video was not totally erased, that it is accessible and it is available for it to be watched and viewed in its entirety. There was no hands and feet. There was no altercation. There was no verbal altercation. It was premeditated. It was Herbert Cotner, DPD officer Herbert Cotner, who was angry that day. Release the video, and the video will show that. I do not see it as complimentary having a false police report attached to my name in line and saying that I was violent with police. It's a lie, and the public has a right to know. Sonia Blue.
Good morning, Mike Rawlings. Good morning, council members. I'm Sonia Blue, and I reside at 18110 Morse Lane, Frankfort Townhomes. I'm with District 12, Ms. Grace. I'm coming to you today to let you be aware of the robberies and the burglaries that are going on through DHA Housing Solution of North Texas. Something has to be done. It's the manager and the maintenance man that are coming in and burglarizing the house. And I wanted to let y'all know what is going on. And I want, to be honest with you, I need a prosecution. We need an investigation. Are y'all aware what's going on with DHA Housing Authority? They're coming in our house and they're burglarizing the maintenance and the landlord. And I wanted to make the mayor aware of what's happening in the city of Dallas. And something has to be done. I want people prosecuted. I want, you know, they've taken some things from me. And I want justice. So I'm coming to you today, Mike Rawlings, and council members of Dallas, to let you know that this is unacceptable. And something has to be done. So with that being said, I need some help. Because this has been going on for a while. It's just I'm the only one that's coming to speak up because they done came to the wrong house and burglarized and robbed. And like I said, I want something done. That's pretty much all I have to say. Is just I'm
thank you.
Okay, thank
you.
Thank you.
We'll have a police officer, someone from the police to meet.
Mayor.
Chief Brewster.
Okay.
Ms. Grayson.
Okay.
Ms. Blue, I just wanted to tell you that we do pass your concerns along to DHA from my office.
Okay, I appreciate that. And y'all have a blessed day.
So, yeah, somebody will meet you back here from our police department. Okay? You go ahead.
Next speaker, John Proctor. Not present. Harold Donahue. Not present. Claudia Fowler.
Well, good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
City Council. Again, I'm Claudia Fowler, 4531 Solar Lane, Dallas, Texas, as always in the neighborhood of Joppa. But I'm not here today to talk about anything with the Joppa community, nothing about batch plants. Thank God we're done with that. But I am here to talk about how disappointed I live in District 7. Kevin Felder is my council person. I do live in District 7. And I'm here speaking on behalf of some of the constituency. I cannot speak for all 20,000, given the ones that were born last night and may have passed away this morning. We're about 20,000 strong. And just the behavior, Mr. Mayor, here at City Hall is embarrassing to some of us in District 7. The outbursts, the walking around, the protesting of a vote for my council person last week was very, very embarrassing. You know, we vote you all in. Our votes are very valuable to us. I looked at my great aunt and great uncle's poll tax book I found just the other day. As worn down and as, you know, as faded as it was, it gave me an awakening of what they used to have to go through to pay to go to the polls to just to vote. And then we have the freedom of coming into a polling place. I have the opportunity to be an election judge. The people to come in to be able to vote. And then our votes are taken and thrown away like it's nothing because of how the behavior of council people in this very room. You know, we trust you to be a good steward of our vote, of our confidence, of how we send you to City Hall. You are the voice here at City Hall. Sometimes for the people that are voiceless in the community, they don't know how to come to City Hall to ask for just, you know, simple amenities. So I am outraged. I am angered. I'm embarrassed to have someone to come to City Hall to represent my district for us to only be threatened, embarrassed, talked about, and ridiculed. We talk about doing things big in Dallas, do it B-I-G. We need to have behavior and greatness right around this horseshoe. So I'm here to say to you, Mr. Mayor, thank you Thank you, Ms. Gates, and thank you, Mr. Callahan. So I believe in giving people flowers while they yet live to hear them knocking their stretched out inside the four walls of a beautiful sanctuary. Thank you for recognizing last week just what last week was. It was a racial slap in the face to our community. So thank you for calling it out on just what you saw, because that's exactly what it was. I am appalled that when we send you down here, this is what we're getting. But I can say this much in my last 13 seconds and counting. To our council person, to all council people, this is not your city hall. This belongs to the city of Dallas. And anchor yourself, because election time is coming back around. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Y'all have a great day.
Thank you.
Carolyn Arnold. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mayor, councilman, to staff. I'm Carolyn King Arnold. I reside in District 4, 835 Timberdale Lane. I serve as the chairwoman of the Oak Cliff Leadership Council. I am here today to briefly highlight the conversation that is forthcoming on the cultural arts plan for Dallas. You have a scheduled city council action to take place at the end of October, and I'm asking that you postpone that vote because of the lack of inclusion. It tends to follow up with the same conversations that we heard this morning in terms of exclusion of our voices, particularly of the African-American community. I reside in District 4, and they are representing about 80,000 people that have not been a part of this conversation. So as we plan for a diverse, livable, and progressive city within the next 20 years, my concerns are the following with this particular plan. Number one, as we talk about cultural inclusion, we, on the very face of this particular plan, have omitted many cultural experts here locally. We're spending tens of thousands of dollars to resources and contractors who do not live in this city. As a matter of fact, it's very difficult for them to actually know from the first time that they sit down to discuss just truly what exists in terms of cultural activities in this community. You've started off with about four vendors, Lord Culture Resources. One out of 38 of their staff members reflects African-American heritage. You have the BC Workshop. When looking at the workshop, looking at the website, there are zero out of 13 members, no African Americans on that particular committee. Then you have H&R Advisors, 7 out of 70 reflect African American heritage. And then you have Idyllic Interactions, which is 8 staff members, 50% Hispanic and 50% African American. I find this very concerning that we're not using our tax dollars to support our local initiatives. So as we close here, the other suggestion that I see that I'm going to offer that I see missing is how are we communicating these town hall meetings that you have forthcoming to the African American community? I don't see any evidence of inclusion of African American media. I don't see the inclusion, and this would include Examiner newspaper, North Dallas Gazette, the Elite News, Heaven 97. I see no examples, not at all, of any resources that pertain to getting this information out to our communities. Last but not least, as we look at these meetings, I want to highlight them just so that you'll know, because according to the website of the Cultural Arts Committee, you've reached every zip code, all of the stakeholders and zip codes throughout the city. You have remaining Bachman Lake, one at Southwest Center Mall, Fretz Park Library, Dallas Museum of Arts, Moody Performance Hall, and a webinar. There are no activities in District 4, and you are omitting some 80,000 people from this cultural arts plan that we're planning on for the next 10 to 20 years here in the city of Dallas.
Thank you. We'll have the city manager look into that.
Harold Donahue.
Hello, good afternoon. Well, almost there. I want to, my name is Harold Donahue, D-O-N-A-H-U-E. It's kind of chopped up there a little bit. I'm from in District 3 right now where I currently reside. I want to thank Callahan and Gates for standing up for the African American. I do really appreciate them
making their voice and their voice known. It really bothered me. I actually took off of work just to be here because I feel like there is some form of, if there's some form of disparity or something that comes along that allow us to lose what we have so much fought for. I think that's a problem. This is one city. We put our taxes into one bucket, and we pray that it comes out the best way possible for the benefit of the entire city. I am just appalled that some of the mindsets, because if you're feeling that way and you're coming back and you're saying that, you know, we ought to change what has worked, then we cannot blame the actions of one upon a whole culture, a whole race of people. It bothered me, and I am very concerned about this city and where her efforts are. We've been through a lot as a city, been here the majority of my life, and I tell you, it's really hard to see what's going on. We are complaining about our police. That should be top priority. I never know it's an issue. And Mayor, I'm with you on that budget. I would have said no to with this amendment because, again, it doesn't seek out enough for the future. We're increasing, but we're not improving in the sense of more police. But again, back to my original point, it's been a long day for me. It's been a long time. And I just do not expect or respect those who do not respect my culture. We are just as important. I won't say Black Lives Matter. We know we all matter. Everybody matters. But let's be inclusive and not exclusive when you consider us as a different way. You know, we have education just like you have education. And then I'm going to say this. Then to walk out, and I saw one walk out with a non-vote on the video. That just bothered me. And then you're part of the NAACP. Those things bother me. And you know, and it really is a part and a factor in my life for this particular city to move forward. We must do better. We must stop looking. We must start looking through blinded eyes and not having respect a person. But we should have respect of nation, respect the community, respect the city, and we should function as a city that wants to improve everybody and not a few.
Thank you.
David King, not present. Marilyn Cox.
Good morning. My name is Marilyn Cox, and I'm with
Ms. Cox, if you can just move that microphone. Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm with Wynnewood Heights Neighborhood Association. We located at 67 and West Keys. My address is 622 Dogwood Trail, Dallas, Texas, 75224. I come today asking that the City of Dallas go back and amend the 2018-2019 budget to include the Wynnewood Heights community into the budget because the budget do not include service for our community. The City of Dallas says service is first an expectation for the City of Dallas. So if that's so, our community is not being served. Number one, our streets need repair. 700 block West Keys, 1100 block of Hope Smith, 500 block of Lacewood, 3200 block of Llewellyn. Our community was built in 1950 and very little changes have been made. So we are asking for help for our community. Our children in our community, some of our streets do not have sidewalks. So that means that our children are standing in the street. If it's raining, then they have the choice of standing in the mud. That is danger and it's not a quality life for our children. We have hot spots in our area which are considered a target area because of crime. The Dallas Inn Motel, you can go there and buy drugs anytime. We have people dying there constantly because of drug buying and drug selling. K2, that takes a lot of our police time and our rescue first responder time, picking up people on K2. We really need to look into Dallas regarding the drug. We also have the Key Spoke Shopping Center. It's right across the street from Baba Jordan Elementary School. Our children feed us every day. It's a slum. We are tired of not getting service. We have the car wash, drugs. So we ask in the city of Dallas, what are you going to do to help us? Because we do need your service. And if you say service is the first expectation, not in our community.
Thank you, Ms. Cox. Ms. Cox came to the town hall meeting the other day, and I really appreciated her points of view. Excuse me, Mr. Griggs.
I was going to say that Mayor Pro Tem Thomas and myself, our offices in addition District 4, received a recent email, and then we'll certainly help with District 4 in getting those things taken care of. We received that email, so we're working on those issues. Thank you.
I've got them on my list for District 4 right here, so thanks. Next.
Lorene Clifton. Lorene Clifton, not present. LaCoya London, not present. Joan Smoltzer, not present. Vincent Parker, not present. Lauren Babis.
Hi, I'm Lauren Babis, Farmers Branch, but formerly from District 7. In May of this year, criminals tested if Dallas was safe for animal fighting and other cruelty. Titan was adopted with a chip, then killed and dumped in front of cameras on Doughty Ferry Road. Dallas assigned the case to the SPCA, and the SPCA declined to send an investigator to the scene. According to Dallas City Open Records, the SPCA never, not a few days later, not ever, requested the camera footage of Titan's execution. So our city has passed the criminal's test. They know that animal cruelty is A-OK in Dallas. They know that they can keep torturing and abusing animals to make money, or just because they enjoy it and it's fun for them. There will be no repercussions. Given how the SPCA mishandled Titan's case, which should have been open and shut, the SPCA should have nothing to do with cruelty investigations in this city. That said, if this council still wants to use SPCA investigators, that's fine, as long as law enforcement directs, manages, and supervises their work from dispatch all the way through to prosecution. Otherwise, it's literally not legal for them to present cases for prosecution. May I remind you that the entire purpose of the Dallas Police Department, or any police department, is to enforce laws. I know that our police department is stretched too thin, but that means this city has a staffing issue to fix. It does not mean it's okay for the police to offload animal cruelty investigations to the SPCA any more than it would be okay for them to offload rape investigations to the Dallas Area Rape Crisis Center or child abuse investigations to CASA. They need to partner with those community organizations, of course, but they cannot put them in charge. Whether or not Chief Hall agrees that police are accountable for law enforcement, legally, they absolutely are. And this council is accountable for properly equipping them to do so. I urge any of our 8 champions in this horseshoe to find out what the police need to be successful in this endeavor and propose a budget amendment for it. After all, it's going to be really hard to get reelected if you aren't able to keep this city's constituents and their companion animals safe. Thank you.
Todd Smith, not present. This concludes your open microphone speakers.
Thank you. What we're going to do, everyone, now is we're going to break into a closed session, executive session, to take, excuse me, ma'am?
Erin Warren.
Were you on?
Yes, Erin Warren.
Okay.
I called her earlier.
What's that? We called earlier, but come on up. Come on up.
Erin Warren, Plano. I grew up and spent 18 years of my life in Dallas, and my immediate family still lives here. I'm ashamed to say I'm ashamed of how the city runs for animals and people now is an understatement. I started out rescuing, fostering, advocating for animals about 20 years ago. But as I got older, I have realized life is about people as well, and I was put here to serve people as well as animals. We are all human beings, no matter where we live and what our income level is. We all deserve to live with dignity and peace. I'm here to advocate for an animal cruelty unit within DPD, not investigating what goes on in South Dallas, specifically Doughty Ferry, as well as other southern Dallas areas, is missing the boat on keeping the city, its citizens, and animals safe. Personally, I fostered a puppy by the name of Dewey, who was dumped with his six siblings at 9 weeks of age in the summer of 2016 on Doughty Ferry Road. A huge storm was rolling in. Thankfully for this family, a rescuer and advocate ran to their aid. The rescue group I volunteer for has fostered many dogs and puppies from South Dallas over the last 2 years since we've been in existence. We are also a DAS partner. I am tired of having to drive to Dallas to rescue animals off your streets or in your shelter. I'm tired of driving to Dallas to volunteer to clean up the mess it is regarding abused, discarded, and neglected animals. And I'm tired of seeing the tragedy on your streets day after day, hour after hour. You should be astonished at the level and depth of the work that citizens are doing because the city of Dallas won't. I know I am. And also be thankful for their hard work. Handing over animal cruelty investigations to the privatized SPCA is ill-fated and just a Band-Aid. Having this unit within DPD that investigates crimes of these animals, these animal dumpers and abusers will help to get more criminals off the streets of Dallas, which should be your goal. The animal cruelty investigators need to be carefully selected. They should feel strongly about the current situation in order to make some changes, because where you are now has not improved at all. We need definite transparency. I cannot stress the need for transparency enough. I cannot, and the willingness within the unit to work with citizens who have done the job of city employees for the last 4 years in order to move the needle with dumping and animal cruelty in South Dallas. Much of this work and reporting has been compiled by the citizens free of charge already and will give the new investigators a solid foundation to start from. I don't understand how you all can sit on this council and sleep at night knowing what's going on and not having a plan in place to work on this issue while citizens die, lose their limbs, and are hospitalized in addition to what happens to defenseless animals. Animals and people are suffering in your city. Other similar-sized cities across the nation have an animal cruelty unit within their police departments. Dallas is behind the eight ball. And be the change for the greater good and get the city of Dallas on a better footing with an animal cruelty unit as
Thank
soon
you.
As possible.
Thank you.
This includes your open microphone speakers.
So what we're doing now, we're going to break into a closed session and take up the matter that I'll read in a second. Then we'll come back, and we've got one more voting agenda after that. Then we'll close and adjourn for the day. So with that, it is now 11:34 on September 5th, 2018. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551074, Personnel Matters of the Texas Open Meetings Act, regarding discussion regarding the appointment of an interim city attorney. Thank you. No. Guys, I got to have everybody leave now. Okay, you can come back. You don't have to go home. You just can't stay here. We have somebody back in the room. There it is. All right, good. Let me just read this. The City Council has completed its closed session under Section 551074 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, and at 11:42 a.m. on September 5th, 2018, we have returned to open session. Mr. Callahan, you had a personal privilege.
Yeah, just personal privilege. I just simply want to thank City Manager Broadnax for listening and honoring our request to provide a Texas flag on the sixth floor over there.
That was good.
We now have that. I don't know if that's the Republic of Texas flag or the state flag, but I'll go.
I assume the state. So, thank you. With that, Ms. Johnson, would you read item six?
Christopher J. Queso as interim city attorney for the City of Dallas, effective at the close of business on August 31, 2018, to serve until the City Council selects and appoints a permanent city attorney.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. He's got to read something. He's got to read something here.
I move to appoint Christopher J. Queso as interim city attorney to be paid his annual base salary plus an additional 5%. While serving as interim, and a one-time retention payment of $39,978.25, payable in four installments of $9,994.56 on October 1st, 2018, November 1st, 2018, December 1st, 2018, and January 1st, 2019.
Second.
Okay, we got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. Meeting's adjourned, 11:43.